Well, hello, hello, hello. This is Keith Teedy from New Media Central. It's been a good long while since the last time I published a podcast. Had a lot of stuff going on since the last time I did it. I went on my webpage, newmediacentral.org, to see when the last time I posted one. It was last February, so it's been about a year. Had a lot of stuff happen between then and now. Built a house with my brother and got it sold. That takes a good long time. And I'm still in the hunt for some more projects to do in that regard. I know that's no excuse for me, since I'm not real good at this yet. It takes me a long time to kind of get in the mode of doing a weekly podcast. It's a grind, really, to get it down, recorded, and then edited, and then posted. It takes a lot of work. And I'm not complaining, it's just the fact is it takes a lot of time and energy, which I haven't had in the last while. So anyway, today's show is a good one, I think. Actually, I recorded a number in the last few months. I've recorded a number of what I thought might be good podcasts, and they just weren't good. Honestly, this one's not the best one I've ever done either for this week, but it's getting me back in the groove of doing the weekly process. Anyway, today's show is about big government and big business being too big to fail. That ain't right. It ain't right. And we gotta fix it. There's some other folks out there that are on the bandwagon, actually way ahead of me on the bandwagon as far as things we can do to fix that. There's some folks out there that want to get money out of government, which is the key thing, really. And they've got some stuff going on to help facilitate that. Also talk about, I saw a movie about, it's actually a mini-series, it's on Netflix, about Vietnam. It's really good. I've been very interested in Vietnam ever since I was just a little bit too young to go. Kind of wished I'd have gone, you know, that when I was 15 and 16 years old, I wanted to go. I wanted to go fight for my country. Turned out that the war was, by the time I was eligible, the war was winding down and it was almost over. Matter of fact, the year after I turned 18, they brought all the troops home and signed all the treaties, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing about it, I've been so interested in it, and I was so interested at the time that I've continued to read about it and do some study on it. To me, what it turns out to be is, it's when I realized that the U.S. government was no longer untouchable. When I was a kid, when I was a little kid, growing up, if the United States said they were going to do something, it got done, and it got done right. And it got done on time. You know, we're going to the moon before 1970. We went to the moon. How can you get a human from this planet to the moon? I mean, even now, even though that was a long time ago, and we've technologically improved dramatically, I still wonder, how can you get a human being from here through space to the moon and back again alive? How can you do that? It amazes me still. We could do whatever we wanted to do. Vietnam, to me, was, it's when I had the realization, hey, we're not what we used to be, sadly. And it kind of came on, you know, a little bit. I was a little concerned. And the older I got, of course, you know, it's true for any generation. When you get older, you get more crotchety and you get more set in your ways and you get more concerned about stuff like that. But, you know, truly, the United States has gone through the ringer, so to speak. And to me, that was kind of when I realized the beginning of the end for the United States. And it's not the end. It's nowhere near the end. We're still the lone superpower, and we're still the greatest country on the planet. We've taken a nosedive, actually. But we are so far ahead of everybody else before that we're kind of coming down even with it. And that's kind of the plan of some people that are in charge of our government, and that's what needs to change. We need to get some people in there that can do the job. And right now, we don't have that. I talk about that, too, about how the people that can be elected, the group of people that can be elected, are a very select few. And when I say select, that's what I mean. They were selected by big business and rich people. I got nothing against rich people, except that it gets to a point where it gets out of hand, and we're there now. So, anyway, I talk about gasoline prices at the pump, about the upside and the downside of that. You know, there's, of course, the obvious upside is benefit to consumers. You know, that's cool to go gas station, and I got a big old F-150 pickup truck that sucks the gas pretty good, and I was spending $60 every time I filled it up 2 months ago, and now it costs half that. And then, of course, the downside is the employment. With gas prices this low, it's harder for some of these places like fracking and horizontal drilling, etc., like that, that to continue doing what they do, and they have to lay people off in that regard. Also want to talk about the middle class, how it's eroding, and how that's the key. That's the everything to me of, you know, a huge middle class. Everybody is in the middle class is where it should be. You know, there's a few rich and there's a few poor, and everybody else is middle class. Lower middle class, middle class, upper middle class, that doesn't matter. As long as you have that concept of, if I work hard and I work smart and I put everything I got into my life, I know I can do that because the payoff will be there. And when it gets to the point where you wonder, is it worth the effort? Because I may do all this work and some government entity is going to make sure I don't get what's due me. You know, there's no guarantee that everybody's going to win. But there is a guarantee that you could win in the old days. And we need that back again. We got to have that, because when you lose that, nobody gives a shit. Nobody's going to go out and do all the work it takes to make everything happen in this country. If you don't know in your gut that your work is going to be rewarded if you do everything right, then you're not going to try. Why would you? Why would you put yourself through all the effort it takes to produce something and get something, you know, worthwhile going if someone's going to come by and knock you down? And I know, I mean, no matter when in this history of the world, if you try to do something, you got knocked down a lot of times. But what's happening now is you get knocked down and you can't get back up again because there's forces keeping you from it. We have to ensure that everybody knows, and it's hard. It's easier to knock people down. It's hard to get things in a situation where people know for sure that all their efforts are going to be worth it. And we got to get there. That's what it takes. It takes people talking about it. It takes podcasts, the new media out there talking about the things what we got to do to make sure that we get back there. And we got to. I mean, we do. It's up to us. Somebody's got to do it. This is the last place on the planet that we can do it. So we got to. Always, I appreciate your questions and comments. You can go to my website, www.newmediacentral.org, and leave me a message. Ask me a question. I check that out pretty regularly. So if you send something over that mode of conversation, I get back to you pretty quick on it. That's where we're at. Hope you enjoy the show. I want to talk today about something I've probably already beat to death, but I'm going to keep on talking about it because it needs to be talked about, needs to be said, and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to keep saying it over and over again because it doesn't sink in immediately. When people hear it, they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the full effect of it is we're getting creamed by these two giant entities, the government and big business. And I mentioned it before. Well, the law says this, and the big business says, well, we need the law to say that, and then government goes, oh, okay, yeah, well, you just keep feeding us, you know, for our re-elections, and we'll make sure everything is good for y'all. And then, of course, you got your press in it for their deal, too. They make it plausible to all of us peons for this stuff to happen, and they cover up what they need to cover up, and they expound the things they need to expound. here's one I'm talking about. Kind of goes along with what I'm going to say here. When you read about the drop in gasoline at the pump prices, it's gone way down, which is great for consumers. Of course, there's always two sides to everything, and as I'll talk about a little later, there's some downsides to it also concerning employment, the fracking process, etc. You know, it has to be, it's around 50-something, a little under 50 a barrel right now, and I think it needs to be around 73 a barrel for fracking to be doable, profitable. So the fracking people have put the brakes on some of their operations, which hurts employment in that sector. But what I was going to say was every time the press, the willing accomplices of the government, right wing or left wing, it doesn't really matter. It's both sides. It doesn't matter. And I've talked about that before, and it absolutely does not matter. When people are elected in this country, they're elected from a pool of about 1,000 people somewhere. I don't know exact numbers, but it's probably around 1,000. Well, it's a pool of people that the big business, big pharma, big oil, big everything want to be in charge of the country and the federally elected government, because they can do whatever they want. I mean, they hold all the cards, and that's what has to change. And we have to start electing some people that are not in that pool of 1,000 people that can be elected. And it means third party. And I'm kind of getting off task here. What I wanted to say before I forget it one more time is every time the willing accomplices in the press talk about the drop in oil prices and especially the price at the pump, is they call it, it's equivalent to a tax hike. And they shove that in there every time. And they make you think, after hearing it so many times and coming from the press, everybody believes it, that like a tax cut. Forget that. Please forget that. It's nothing at all to do with the tax cut. They just want it to sound like, yeah, the price of gas is coming down. You get everyone responsible for that. Good old government takes care of you. And we're getting you some benefit here. We're taking the price of gas down for you. It had nothing to do with the government. It's a glut of oil on the world market that's causing it's OPEC mostly, not dropping their production like they normally do. And there's some theories on that. People think they're trying to get rid of the little guys and the fracking and all that stuff. If the price of oil goes down far enough, they can handle it. They got deep pockets. But they're thinking that there's, you know, some smaller players out there that's competition for them that they want to get rid of. They let the price drop, and those guys go. They're gone. Fortunately, I think in this country, the ones that are going to have some trouble, like the fracking and the horizontal drilling and et cetera, they may shut down temporarily, but they're going to be able to come kick right back in. It's my theory on it. You know, once again, it's nothing to do with the government. They had no idea it was coming. They were surprised as everybody else, and everybody is surprised about it. But it makes sense now that it's happened, and you look back, if you think about it, China is using a lot less oil. The world is using a lot less oil than they were a few years ago, except the United States are actually using more. And globally, the demand for oil is down right now. And the United States and others have increased their production. So OPEC's over there going, well, let's see. Yeah, we could drop our production and keep the prices up, but why? Well, we can knock the shit out of some people here and take care of some problems that we got. So let's just keep our production going. Yeah, they're keeping their production up. Price of crude, because there's a glut on the market, has dropped dramatically, and they're taking care of some problems there. Now, what are those problems? Two that come to mind right off the bat are Venezuela and Russia. Venezuela is like 90% of their annual revenues for the country is oil. They got a lot of it, but it's low-grade oil, and it's not nearly as valuable. So when the price of sweet crude, Brent crude, I think they call it, is at $50 a barrel, which is extremely low. The stuff that Venezuela is producing is like 30 bucks because it's a lower quality. They can't do Dookie. It has to be around $100 a barrel for Venezuela to make their operations profitable. When it gets down to $50 a barrel and theirs is only worth $30 a barrel, they can't do nothing. They can't even turn on that spigot, let alone refine it or get it ready for sale. They're hurting. Russia, they have a large amount of their gross domestic product from oil also. However, they have a lot of natural gas too. And so they're not hurt as bad, but they are on such wobbly legs right now, and they have been for a long time actually, that any disruption is a major blow to them. So those two countries, among others, there's others out there that, you know, Iran and Iraq, both of them have a lot tied into their oil production. And when the prices of oil go down, those people get hurt. People that really win are the people buying fuel. Airline tickets haven't really seen a big drop yet because the airlines aren't stupid enough to say, yeah, let's drop the prices right now and bump them back up again when the price of oil goes back up again, because they're suspecting that the price will go back up, and it probably will. Some people are saying crude could go down to $20 a barrel because of the huge glut of oil that's on the market right now. Nobody really knows. Airlines, if it stays low like it is right now for several more months, they'll probably start dropping prices too. They have a little bit actually advertising the fact that they're dropping prices because of jet fuel prices, but they have. And I know that because I've looked at some airline fares compared to like a month ago, the amount of money that I have to spend. My daughter lives down in Tampa and we're thinking about going down there. Price that we'd have to pay for a fare a month ago is higher than it is now. So prices are coming down. They've got that fuel surcharge they're charging, and they haven't eliminated that yet. So if they do that, the prices of airline tickets will probably come down pretty good, and that'll be great. Another benefit of cheaper per barrel crude. But where I'm going with this, you know, like I said, the government, the willing accomplices in the press are saying that this drop in oil, the price at the pump going down, is like a drop in taxes. That's pure. That is absolutely designed to make it look like the government's doing something that they're not. They got nothing to do with it. I mean, they do in the normal scheme of things, but it's not like the government said, okay, we're going to drop the price of oil and we're going to help everybody out and give them a tax cut. No, it happened. Everybody was surprised, especially at how far it's gone down. And for them to sit around and for the press to sit around and say, yeah, this is equivalent to a tax cut, F them. I mean, really. And it kills me to say it. And it's kind of changing gears here, but I watched a mini-series, I guess, on the Vietnam War. I've always been intrigued by it. There's so many aspects of it that interest me. When I was 14, 15 years old, I really wanted to go over there. I wanted to sign up. And by the time I was actually old enough to do it, the war was like almost over. They knew the war was about over, or they were going to pull out, I suppose, and realistically, the war's still not over. But they signed all these treaties and everything and brought all the troops home. So essentially, for us, it was over. But something that was brought up in that miniseries that I was watching about it is that it was, I don't know, a year after we left, the North Vietnamese NVA, North Vietnamese Army, did their biggest assault of all on the South Vietnamese. That's when Saigon became Ho Chi Minh City. So yeah, when we left, things went to hell. That's a good miniseries. It's produced by the History Channel. So you don't know if all the facts are exactly real, you know, if the things happened exactly the way that they said they did and that the outcome was exactly what was said and et cetera, et cetera. If somebody else put together a documentary like that, it could have a whole different tone to it. But it was very interesting to see. It was compiled with actual soldiers and footage of the actual war. A lot of it that had been seen before, some of it that had never been seen before, and it was good. And they produced it in high def, so it was good images, as good as you can get. And there were actual soldiers that were over there talking about it, and it was kind of cool how they did it. But anyway, the whole thing I was getting at on that was to me, and it had been happening before that, but that kind of underscored the whole thing about the U.S. government being so outrageous, being so full of it, so full of themselves, thinking that they can do anything and nothing's going to get in their way and they can pull off anything. And they realized that they couldn't when they went to Vietnam. Those VC were in it for their lives. I mean, our guys were too, you know, no doubt about that. They went over there and they put their lives on the line, and a lot of them did die. I don't remember, 40,000 soldiers died over there. But they that's their home. They had an intense desire to take over South Vietnam. And their losses compared to ours were huge. Several times. At one point, it was 12 to 1. I don't know what the final one was, but it was, they sacrificed a lot more than we did in terms of lives, especially as a percentage of the population of the country. It's huge. And we went waltzing in there thinking, you know, and they made this clear at the beginning of this miniseries that when we got into the war, kind of by accident, they thought, yeah, a couple months and we're going to wipe them out. No big deal. We'll be done. And I forget what it was, 25,000 soldiers or something went over there. And they thought, yeah, this will not take any time at all. We'll take care of it. We'll be home in time for Christmas, I think was what they were saying. Turned out to be darn near 10 years before we got out of there. Anyway, that to me was kind of and it wasn't the absolute starting point, but it was kind of the underscoring of the U.S. government that used to be big dog, big daddy, could do anything, really. I remember when I was a little kid, and if the U.S. government said they were going to do something, it got done. And it got done well and quickly. We said, we're going to the moon. We went. Nobody else can do that. United States could do it. We used to be able to do what we said we were going to do. Now we can't. There's too much PC, for one thing, political correctness. And that was one of the downfalls, in my opinion, of the Vietnam War, was all televised. And there's things, I mean, I'm completely for openness and telling the truth. But there's things about war the people who aren't in actually fighting the war should never know about. It's not a cut and dried business. I mean, you do things in war that you wouldn't do normally. And you do them because you got to win the war. And it's not pretty. And it had a huge effect on the outcome of the war when the press was over there covering the war. It had a huge effect on Americans who weren't fighting. All the people at home saw that and they were going, what the hell is that? And it changed everything. There were riots. The hippie movement came about and said, hey, we're not going. And they were burning their draft cards, and a bunch of them got together. John Kerry, Secretary of State, was among a bunch of them that threw their medals away. They rallied together somewhere in Washington, I think it was, and they, one at a time, starting out, they went up and they threw their medals over some fence. And then pretty soon they were all doing it, and they were throwing their medals. They were making a statement that this war is not worth fighting, and anything that I get from it, like a medal or something like that, is valueless to me. Well, John Kerry has been vilified by the right for doing that, and I agree with that sentiment. They went over and risked their lives. It doesn't matter whether it was right or wrong. They still did it. They risked their lives for their country. And some of them got medals for what they did, and it should mean a lot to them. But, you know, I totally understand the meaning behind it. It was a meaningless war to them, and anything that came out of it was worthless to them. So they, anyway, that was all based on the fact that the press went over there and covered it, got everybody in this country all pissed off about what was going on over there. We were not winning the war like we had been in previous wars. And everybody said, this is stupid. this is a war we should not be in. To me, that was kind of the beginning of the end, the perceived beginning of the end, is when people realize, hey, we're not all we're cracked up to be. We're not like we used to be. We're not the best generation. And it took a toll. I guess it's inevitable when a country or a group over time, it's hard to keep up the will to continue to be the best of the best of the best. And you see it in big companies, you see it in countries, you see it all the time. One thing that happens is laziness kind of sets in. For decades, this country, it was just known that if we said we were going to do something, it got done. And nobody really had to put forth the effort to get it done because somebody else did it. And that kind of spills over, you know, over time to the point where nobody wants to do anything to get things done. That's just assumed by everyone that someone's going to do it. And turns out, you got to do it. I got to do it to get it done. And when nobody's doing it, it don't get done anymore. And it's inevitable. It happens in everything. I think the United States had a good long run. And I firmly believe, and that's why I have these conversations, that's why I have these podcasts, is I firmly believe we can get back. And I absolutely want that to happen. And I absolutely think there are a large number of people in this country who believe that to be true and believe it can happen. And that's why I'm talking. That's why I'm speaking. Because it has to happen to me. There has to be a superpower. There has to be a leader. If it's not us, it's somebody else. So it might as well be us. There's a lot of benefits and we have everything needed to do it. You know, we've got the firepower in our military. We've got the resources, people, and we got everything we need to maintain our superpower status. The only thing we are lacking is the will to do it. And that comes from PC, political correctness. People saying, no, we shouldn't be the superpower because we hurt people and people are hurt by us. And come on, man. And people are hurt anyway. So yeah, let's just do what we need to do to get her done. And the two things that we got to be fighting against now, once again, are big business and government. And we also got to come back against the mainstream press. And that's what I am. I'm the alternate press. I'm the new media. And we got to get our word out. We got to amass ourselves and have hundreds and thousands of podcasters out there and doing whatever we can to make it so that instead of turning on the TV or the radio, we get on the internet and listen and watch and get the real facts, get the truth. Instead of the bullshit served up by the media about the bullshit that the big government and big business has decided they want to do so they can improve and increase their revenues and widen that gap between the few and the many. And it's not like they're sitting around going, yeah, we want that gap to be huge. No, they don't give a shit about us. And if they think they can do something to get more power, more money, they'll do it. Doesn't matter who gets hurt in the deal. So they're not really like, let's screw the middleman, let's screw the middle class. They're just greedy and taking everything they can. And as it turns out, the result of that is the middle class disappears. And that gap between the few and the many, it gets bigger. And we don't want that. The many, us, you and me, we don't want that. We want the middle class, that experiment that the United States did 200 years ago that worked really good. We want that back. We want the middle class to flourish. And there's a lot of benefits, many things other than just the middle class prospering and not just surviving, but succeeding. And the old American dream, if you work hard, you can really do well in this country. That has to come back. We have to have that. We may be the only place left on the planet that can have that. And it's very beneficial to everyone else on the planet, because in that situation where there are a large middle class, good things happen. Good ideas come out of it. When it's just a small few that are coming up with ideas that take hold because they run everything, you don't get the benefit of a large, a huge middle class. Most of the people in the country having a say-so on what goes on and coming up with ideas that are good for everyone. That's what it's all about, you know, getting the middle class, the massive amount of people in this country back in the mainstream of being able to determine what goes on in this country and what goes on in the world. We have a right, we have an obligation to do that because it's good for the rest of the world too. And good things come out of it, and good things for everybody, not just us and not just, you know, it's good all around. So with that, I'm going to wrap this up. Basically, what I wanted to talk about today was the price of oil and its effect. I kind of went off the radar a few times talking about some other stuff, but it all blends together. It's the government losing their ability to maintain a superpower status. It's the big business getting so greedy that they're taking control of the government and the press. And it's all working out real good for them and increasing that gap between the few and the many. Heard a stat the other day, 1% of the people on the planet own 50% of the riches. That can't be. That's not going to work. Once again, I've referenced this before, but think of The Hunger Games. If you ever saw that movie or read the book, there's that one city where a very few number of people live, and the rest of the masses are out there, you know, working in the dirt and barely surviving. And we don't want to go there. We didn't want to come close. We didn't want to think about that. We want to get things the way they should be. We know they can be. For a couple of centuries, it worked out really good. And we know we can do that. And we have to do that. Once again, it's not just for us. It's for the rest of the world. I mean, we show the rest of the world how to do it, and they go, yeah, that's a good thing. And they do it too. And the whole world, every country in the world, has a huge middle class. And everybody on the planet does really well. There's enough stuff for everyone to do good. We got to get there.